convene. The time is 1:30 with a half hour delay today. Representative Guttenberg, Seaton, Roses, Wilson, co-chairs Johnson and Gatto are present. Day 77 of the session, so 12 days and we're, no, never mind. We have before us four bills. I'm going to begin number one, Kodiak Narrow Cape Public Use Area. Representative Ledoux, we have her staffer here. I'll need you to identify yourself and any affiliations that show that you have a strong interest in this bill.
Chairman Gatto, I'm Suzanne Hancock, staff to Representative Ledoux to continue with this bill.
Yeah, proceed. I was just looking in the sponsor statement. It says there are currently four public use areas recognized in state law, and it mentions four, but it doesn't mention Kinnick.
Actually, I've amended that sponsor statement, and I regret that I did not
all right.
give you the new one, but it does. It's now five, and
it is
Kinnick
five.
River.
Okay,
maybe we should hold this over until we
get so it's not eight or something, and no. We're just short on them. All right, thanks very much.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
I move that we have CS for House Bill number 203, version E, before us.
Is there an objection? Having none, we have version E before us. Hope I have it.
Your desk here.
That's a different bill. Is there a CS in front of us?
You should have the CS in front of you. And also, there's a conceptual amendment for your consideration also. Thank you.
Okay, I have my very own personal copy of version E, so we may proceed.
Chairman Gatto, I believe there's several people wanting to testify and continue with what was discussed the other day.
Correct.
And also, based on the testimony of a gentleman last week, there is a conceptual amendment to that also.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Representative Guttenberg.
I was just wondering if we could have a just a little review of what changed in the CS.
The Chairman, Representative Guttenberg through the chair, the changes in the CS were primarily the legal description, the DNR, took about 10,000 acres out of what was in the original bill, and they can speak to why they did that. And also, the change was we changed May to Shell as far as the management plan was concerned.
Thank you.
Was that your amendment, actually?
Representative
Chair. Okay. Are you done? I'm going to go to public testimony. I asked Kodiak Island Borough Mayor Jerome Selby and Rick Gifford both last time if they wouldn't mind holding over. Are you there?
We're here, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Is this Jerome Selby?
Yes, it is.
I appreciate you coming forward again. By the way, Representative Kawasaki has joined us. And Representative Edgman, and I think we had the rest already called. Mr. Selby, Kodiak Island Borough Mayor, I need you to introduce yourself for the record so the secretary knows who you are and your affiliation.
All righty. I'm Jerome Selby, Mayor of the Kodiak Island Borough. Mr. Chairman, appreciate you and members of the committee hearing this bill. This is an important bill for our community. It came to our attention a couple, 3 years ago when there was an attempt to transfer this land to the University of Alaska. And in talking with the university folks, it became apparent that they were going to dispose at least of a significant amount of it because they wanted the revenue producing part of it. So we got to looking at the status of it and realized that this land was kind of at risk for the community. And it's probably the most significant piece of public recreation property on the Kodiak Road system. And that's why it's so important. If you look at the land on the road system, most of it's in private ownership, and there's really very little place where the Kodiak community can go and have recreation. The Passaic Shaak River is adjacent to this, where there's a lot of silver fishing in the summer and early fall. This contains our only surfing beach. If you want to come to Kodiak and go surfing, this is where it's at. And there's just a lot of hiking and other public recreation that takes place on this property because, like I say, it's the one significant piece of land that folks can get to easily by automobile. And so that's why it's so important to us. After the land was withdrawn from the university bill, the community kind of came together and discussed what would be the best way to have the land classified. And we appreciate that Senator Stevens and Representative Ledoux have worked with DNR to come up with a proper classification that allows all of the multiple uses that people want to pursue here in terms of hunting, fishing, recreational bird watching, all sorts of activities. We tried to make sure that it included the current use of the rocket launch facility, which is supported by the community, and continue the grazing leases, which have been a long-term historical use of a significant part of this property as well. And so those are all things that have been worked out or compatible and work well in the community, and we were just looking to be able to maintain that and are asking that you folks make it a public use area so that the threshold, and it doesn't mean it's locked up forever, and everybody understands that, but it does raise the threshold a lot higher in terms of the community being aware that if there's some portion of this that has another use that people would support, that it has a higher threshold of it has to come back and come to the attention of the legislature before another use is allowed on this land. So that's where the community is coming from. We appreciate you folks hearing this bill and would ask that you support it and move it through the process so that we can have this land designated.
Thanks very much. Question, when you call it the rocket launch, it's the same as the Alaska Aerospace Development Corporation?
Yes, sir. That's one and the same.
And is that federal or state?
The Alaska Aerospace Development Corporation is a wholly owned state subsidiary corporation.
Okay.
So it's the state of Alaska's corporation that's running that, and they have a lease on a portion of the area that's included here, and we fully support that.
Okay, if they were to go away and abandon the facility, the land, could they abandon the land or does it revert back to the state?
Well, they just have a lease from the state of Alaska, so it will continue to be state land.
Good. Okay, I appreciate it. Do you know how many acres are involved here or sections or miles? Or?
I believe with the revised number, it's about 46,000 acres, Mr. Chairman.
All right, appreciate that. Next, we'll go to Rick Gifford. Mr. Gifford, are you there?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome to Resources. Welcome, and we need your name and affiliation.
Okay, my name is Rick Gifford. I'm the manager of the Kodiak Island Borough. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I don't have much to add to the mayor's testimony other than just reinforce the importance of the uses that are out there for the public. I've been here for not quite 2 years on Kodiak Island, and I've gone out there several times and found that it is used quite a bit by the community, and it's accessible by road, and so it does make it easy. I would like to thank Senator Stevens and Representative Ledoux for their help in putting this bill together so that it recognizes all of the uses and protects the existing uses, as mentioned by the mayor. For the rocket launch and also the grazing.
Okay.
With that, I'd just be available to answer any questions that you might have. Thank you.
Any questions? No questions. I certainly appreciate your testifying. Next, we'll go to Mr. Larry DeVilbiss. Welcome, Larry.
Well, okay, I was available to answer questions. This is Larry DeVilbiss, the Director of Agriculture for DNR, and good to talk to you, Mr. Chairman.
You know, it's funny, I've known you for so long, I almost should be calling you Mr. Director, but it's hard to do.
Yeah, that's all right. Listen, my only concern is that everybody be aware that this lays over existing cattle leases. In fact, this would certainly not be as valuable a recreation area if it hadn't have been for cattle ranching that goes back clear to the days of the Russians, and these leases exist with the existing leases actually stating that the recreational use is available, and we just want to make sure that any new classifications don't eclipse the existing grass leases, and that's my only concern.
All right. We have about three more people to testify, and then we're going to get to an amendment that deals with your very question, so hang in there. We'll probably get an answer for you. Thanks for testifying. Pat Ladner, Alaska Aerospace.
Yes, I'm here.
Welcome, Pat, to Resources. Can you identify yourself and your affiliation for the record?
My name's Pat Ladner, and I'm the president and CEO of Alaska Aerospace, who owns and operates Kodiak Launch Facility, Launch Complex at Narrow Cape for the state of Alaska.
Okay, did you want to testify? Probably say, you know, it really is important to have this as a public use area or something different?
I'd like to testify in my own words if I could.
You know, I always love it when somebody testifies just in their own words without notes and things like that. So go ahead and tell us a little bit about it, because, you know, this may be the only opportunity this committee has to hear from the big guy at the launch facility and tell us things about that you think we might want to know, should know, and wish we had known, and are grateful that you didn't neglect to tell us. So go ahead.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I appreciate the fact that you're taking the time to hear public testimony. I think there's a lot of people surprised that we, in fact, support this bill, and we do, because I agree with Jerome Selby, very good friend of mine and longtime supporter, that this offers an excellent location on the road system, and Jerome's help and our pushing, we are in the process of finishing, or the state's in the process of finishing the last 9 miles of road to be paved. And, of course, Mr. Burton's been out there forever with Buffalo and his animals, and we all coexist together in a good fashion, and it presents a lot of good conversation for our customers to see Buffalo and everything else roaming free out there. We are in strong support of public recreation. It's a beautiful place, and we have 3,717 acres under an interagency land management agreement from DNR, along with some additional acreage for security and safety reasons if it is required. And I think it totals somewhere around 8,000 total. We've never had to use that extra land for safety and security so far, and hope we never do.
Pat, can you tell us a little bit about the launch facility? I'm dying to hear about rockets, explosions, and fireworks.
Well, thank God we've never had either of those. but in our ILMA, it's very clear, and we've read this bill to make sure that our operations were not hampered, because safety is the number one criteria in our business, and environmental is of course a close second. And in our ILMA, it gives us the right, and along with our legislation, directs us to have a safety program to protect the public, personnel, and property. And so, therefore, when we have critical operations, dangerous operations, we close access to that area. And that only occurs, of course, during the launch, which is like 6 hours prior to the launch itself, depending on the launch vehicle. We close the road, clear the area. We use a helicopter to make sure nobody has wandered in the area. We also utilize local fishing vessels to put up a corridor out in the ocean to make sure that a boat doesn't wander in the area during the final count.
Okay, Mr. Ladler, I need you to take a second. I have a question from Representative Guttenberg. Can you take that?
Absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ladner, we heard some testimony last week on this bill, and one of them was a question about airstrips. We know that there's one on the ranch. Are there public airstrips out there? Do you guys have an airstrip?
Sir, through the chair, we do not have an airstrip out there. In our long-range planning, we have looked at possibly, you know, I mean, if a customer came up and said, hey, you know, if you had an airstrip, it'd make it easier for us to get our stuff in here and we could do 3, 4, 5 launches. Any corporation does long-term planning, and we've looked at that, but we have no plans nor the funds to do that at this time.
Thank you very much. For the record, we've been joined by Representative Coring, actually, quite a few minutes ago. I'm sorry I missed that, sir.
Thank you very much.
Are there any more questions from Mr. Ladner? Thanks so much for your testimony. We're going to go next to Dick Milius, and he is the last person. Dick, are you there?
Mr. Chairman, I'm here, and we're just here to answer questions.
Well, that'll keep it short. Anybody have a question for the DNR, Mr. Rick Milius? Representative Seaton has a question for you.
Dick, the question I had is, I think you've seen the possible proposed conceptual amendment to allow continued use of this area for grazing and as a new number 3, but I'm wondering, because I look at this and it says that we're establishing this to protect and maintain, perpetuate, enhance year-round general public recreation, protect, maintain, and perpetuate, and enhance public enjoyment of use in fish and wildlife, and then we allow other uses that are consistent with those two. If we add a language in here specifically to allow continued grazing, do you think it's necessary to add also a provision here under the purposes to allow continuation of the missile launch facility?
Representative Seaton to the chair. I think the missile launch facility is adequately protected already in the language in section, it would be on page 2 of the original bill under what's section both B and C, recognizing their existing rights to use that land and that that's an allowed use within the refuge. So I think with that language that their use is already protected.
Follow up,
Mr. Representative Seaton.
Okay, and so the addition then of under the purposes to allow continued use of the area for grazing, uses is also just a reiteration of what's contained on page 2 B and C as well.
Representative Seaton to the chair, that's generally correct, but my understanding was that some of the grazing folks were concerned that they wanted to have it a little higher profile in the purposes.
So just following up then, so moving grazing leases into the higher and specified in the purposes, you again are still comfortable with having the rocket launch facility, aerospace stuff, left out of the purposes and have it down in under B and C. Is that correct?
Representative Seaton, yes, that is correct from DNR's perspective.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And this is, we have Representative Edgemond and then Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 2 on number E, it says the commissioner may not manage the public use of it as a unit of the state system. And I guess just to clear things in my mind, Dick, what's the differences between a public use area and a state park system as this bill pertains to?
Representative Edgemond to the chair. State park units are lands that are generally not considered multiple use. They're lands that are set aside specifically for recreation and related purposes. So as a general rule, they're closed to, like, mineral entry, for example. There's usually limitations on leasing. Grazing is usually not a use that's allowed. There's several different types of areas managed by parks, but the most probably least intensively managed areas are public recreation areas, such as Chena State Recreation Area or Natsy Lakes, but again, those areas are, they're closed to multiple uses such as grazing and so on. They're managed primarily for recreation. And then the next higher level is actual state parks where there may be additional kind of restrictions and regulations. So it's, like I say, it's primarily that those areas are that are managed by parks are not considered multiple use areas.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, as a
continue.
As a follow-up, a state park requires a management plan. Is that correct?
Representative Edgman, to the chair. We have prepared management plans for most state park units. I'm not sure if they're actually, if their legislation always requires that or not, but most park units do have a management plan.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Guttenberg?
Thank you. We have a CS in front of us, and from what I understand, it changes the legal description. And we also have a map draft dated 3/28. Can you tell us what the difference are in your legal description, what you've changed?
Representative Guttenberg to the chair, it's primarily just a drafting change in terms of the legal description that's in the original bill and the legal description in the proposed CS are not significantly different except in how they describe the tidelands areas. And so that's what changed is that the we basically squared off the boundary in the tidelands areas. And in the original CS, it was set up to be a certain distance from the shore. And the reason for the change was when we talked to the ledge drafting folks, the ledge legal folks, they thought that the wording that was in the original bill was inconsistent with how the other public use areas set aside in statute are described. So it was more to make this legal description for this consistent with how or past practice for describing these things in terms of the legal descriptions. You know, it doesn't significantly change what areas are actually included within the public use area.
Okay. Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question on it's page 2, line 14, and some of the additional uses. They're specifically cited as additional uses, and I wonder, I read several other, there's two or three other public use areas that are listed in statute, but they don't go in so much depth on specificity on what can be done. I guess I'm reading it here that the commissioner shall allow additional uses and then gives a very strict definition of what they could do. I guess if I could maybe get a comment, and maybe this is more addressed to the sponsor of the bill who wanted to restrict certain things. I guess it's not, it seems pretty exclusive.
I understand. Mr. Milius?
Representative Kawasaki, the chair, I think the older public use areas, you're correct, do not have that. I think this bill, the sponsor patterned this bill to some extent after the Knick public use area, where there was a concern about making sure that a lot of the existing uses were identified specifically, and so I think the drafters took off on that concept and tailored the list a bit to this particular area. From DNR's perspective, I don't know that we have a real concern whether or not that list is in there or not in there.
And thank you. That's important for me too. I was looking at line 14. The commissioner shall allow. And there we go with a whole list of riding, hiking, picnicking, berry picking, fossil collecting, tide pooling, ATVs, bicycling, driving, dog sled. Anyway, it's a long list. And it says he shall allow them. What happens if they become a conflict with grazing leases?
Representative Gatto, I think that's the kind of issue that would require to be sorted out through a management plan. And our understanding of that language, even though it says shall allow those, it doesn't necessarily mean that all those uses would be allowed in all areas, because at some point when you get fairly intensive public uses, some of those uses even on that list could be in conflict, or they could be in conflict, like you say, with the other uses of the area. But that's the kind of thing that would have to get sorted out through a planning process.
But it's right here in the bill, clear as anything can be, that you shall allow all these uses, including, I got a kick out of photographing of gray whales. What if it's not a gray whale and I photographed it?
Representative Giles, through the chair, I think we don't view it, like I say, that either A, that list is all-inclusive, nor B, that that list means that all those uses have to be allowed everywhere. But that is a concern when you do have a list like that, that some people could interpret it. That's why I say, like in past, some of the earlier public use areas, there isn't such a list, and I think with the Connect, people wanted to make sure that all those existing uses were kind of acknowledged.
We could acknowledge them if we had the commissioner may allow. Would you object to that?
Representative Gatto, what was the question again there?
If we change shall to may on line 14, is that...
Representative Gatto, that would be fine with us. That actually may be preferable.
Okay. Anyone else? Oh, Representative Johnson has a question.
Mr. Chairman, if the commissioner may allow, he may not allow as well. And I think that it needs to be very specific that this is not to be restrictive, but to be inclusive. And I think if we say shall allow, we've narrowed or may allow, he may not allow it. Mm-hmm. He may not allow any of it. And just we get a commissioner in there and runs roughshod and says none of this is allowed. And I think the shall is something that would probably be left in there.
Okay. Representative Seaton?
Thank you. And Mr. Milius, so your interpretation of if it's in the statute that the commissioner shall allow all-terrain vehicle driving, that you have authority to limit that for habitat degradation issues or having that in statute in that terminology, does that mean that you lose the ability to regulate for protection of habitat or the purposes of the bill to maintain, protect, and enhance the public enjoyment and fish and wildlife? Does the shall in Section C override your abilities within the purpose to manage that use?
Representative Seaton to the chair, no, it does not, because the lead-in sentence there is consistent with the purposes of AS 4122-240-1 and 2, which is on the previous page, which says maintain, protect, enhance year-round public recreation, and protect, perpetuate, and enhance public enjoyment and use of fish and wildlife. So I think if I guess that doesn't specifically say habitat protection, but I think you could read that to mean that if one of those uses was degrading the very resource that the public use area was established for, that we could regulate that.
I think that's very helpful. I appreciate that. Any other questions? I don't see any other questions. Last chance. Okay, I'm going to go down to page 2, line 27. Commissioner may prohibit or restrict uses determined to be incompatible. And I think that also clarifies things. I did have this question on hunting and grazing lands. If it's the season for hunting and there's a moose on the grazing land and somebody were to shoot a moose, that would be legal. Would the person who's owns the leases be able to say, listen, it's kind of dangerous, I got all these cattle out here and they're stampeding, or just some issues that might come up? Do you envision anything like that?
Representative Gatto, no, because our leases do not grant a right to the grazer to prohibit public uses, including hunting. So the state, it's still state land. The only rights that the grazer has is the rights to have the animals grazing there, and they do have rights and to put like fences and things like that up to keep, if that's consistent with a plan that they've prepared for the range management plan or something. But they would not be able to restrict public use, and they can't control hunting because that's still under state fish and game regulations. So somebody could hunt there. The grazing owner may object, but his lease doesn't give him any legal rights to prevent that.
Thanks very much. I appreciate all your comments. Any other questions from the committee? Okay, I'm going to close. I have no more. Anybody else for public discussion that wants to speak? Doug, please come forward, name and affiliation.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Doug Letch, speaking to you today as the only actual resident of Kodiak Island here in the room. I just wanted to thank the committee for hearing this bill. I've done some work on it on the other side, and I think just wanted to point out that I think Representative Johnson really said it best on what we're trying to do with the bill, and that's protect the existing uses of this really interesting and really dynamic area down there at Narrow Cape, where you do have some great beaches. There's some fishing down there. There's a rocket launch facility. There's a buffalo ranch down that way as well. And we want to make sure that the people like me, the guys who get out in their car in the weekend and take a drive out there or whatever on those long summer days, have the opportunity to continue doing that. And as a resident of Kodiak, I think this bill is dead on. And I know most of the people I've talked to back in Kodiak who've been out at the end of the road share the same feelings towards that area as I do. And thank the committee for taking up this bill.
In addition to being a resident of Kodiak, would you tell us that you're a staffer also?
Yeah, I'm speaking today on behalf of myself, but I am staff to Senator Gary Stevens, who's also from Kodiak.
Okay, appreciate that.
Thank you.
Any other public testimony? Hearing none. Back to the committee. And Representative Seaton has an amendment. We'll call it amendment number one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to offer conceptual amendment number one. On page one, line 12, to section 4123240, and that would be to add a new section 3, which is to 3 would be allow the continued use of this area for grazing uses and operations consistent with the state land use plans and other applicable laws and regulations, and renumber accordingly.
Is there an objection? Hearing and seeing none, amendment 1 is adopted. That is there another amendment? Seeing none, we're back to the bill. Is there any other committee comments? Representative Roses.
I didn't want to object to the amendment because I supported it, but I did want to speak to, now that the amendment is in the bill. I had gone to the sponsor earlier in regards to page 2, line 12, where it talks about grazing and missile launch activities are allowable uses within the Kodiak Narrows. One of the questions I asked was, does that now mean that the folks that currently hold grazing leases no longer have to request a lease because this tells them they can use it without getting one? And, of course, the answer was, well, that's not the intent. And I said, well, we maybe want to clarify what the intent is. And so this says, no, that it doesn't supersede any of the existing laws or regulations that exist. So they still have to go in for their leases, and they still have to bid, and they still have to go through the process. So just...
Okay.
With this amendment, I fully intend to support this bill.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Are you ready for a motion?
I certainly am.
I move CS for House Bill number 203, version E, with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
As amended.
Sorry.
Okay, is there an objection? Seeing and hearing none, the bill passes from committee. And that takes us to... CSHJR4, Kenai/Kasiloff subsistence priority. Representative Olson.
Bill number?
It's number House Joint Resolution 4. We have before us, looks like the original version K, is that correct? I'm sorry, the CS, yep, you're right. The CS for HJR number 4, Fish. Correct?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Conrad Jackson, staff to Representative Olson. Let me just double check here. It should be version M, I believe.
Mm-hmm. I have K.
We all have K.
I'm sorry.
And that's the one that came out of
Fish. Yes, out of Fish. I apologize, yes,
no
sir.
Problem. Go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. As I said, my name is Conrad Jackson. Staff here, Representative Kurt Olson. If I might, Mr. Chairman, have your committee aide. I've just got a couple more pieces of paper. It just shortens a number of these request for reconsideration, a couple of points that Alaska Department of Fish and Game had made, and might save you reading through hundreds of pages.
Sure. Okay. While he's distributing that, just go ahead and proceed.
Thank you, sir. Before you today, HJR 4 is requesting the Federal Subsistence Board to reconsider its decisions regarding subsistence priority or subsistence fishing priority given to Nanilchik, Happy Valley, Hope, and Cooper Landing. Someplace in your packet, I'm hoping that you've also got a color map here that will help you kind of identify some of the communities and the areas we're talking about. I know most of you don't live in that area. Happy Valley is not on any reasonable map that shows the both the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge and Chugach National Forest, so I just sort of put a dot on the map on the highway. It's about equidistant between Anchor Point and Nanilchik. Round numbers about 12 miles or so south of Nanilchik, so I can't say it's totally to scale. It's a pretty small community, but there it is.
Okay.
And the resolution before you was drafted, obviously, to ask that subsistence board to revisit their determination. CNT determinations give subsistence priority to the residents of the Nanilchik and Happy Valley for waters north of and including the Kenai River drainage within the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge and Chugach National Forest, as well as parts of the Kasilof River. And a similar CNT determination is granting the subsistence priority to the residents of Cooper Landing and Hope for the Kenai River drainage. In your packets, you should also have some copies of the request for reconsideration filed by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Again, asking the Federal Subsistence Board to revisit those determinations. And with the committee's indulgence, if I can just read real briefly from a couple of those. On the first one, regarding the community of Nanilchik, as related to the Kenai River, the Russian River, Swanson River, their lakes and drainages. In the RFR, it says, reconsideration is required because in adopting that final rule, the board's interpretation of information, applicable law, or regulation was in error or contrary to existing law. It goes on from there. In another RFR regarding the residents of Nanilchik in regard to the Kasilof River, reconsideration, again, is required because in adopting the final rule, the board's interpretation of information, applicable law, and regulation, or regulation, I'm sorry, was in error or contrary to existing law. They go on for another 30-odd pages there. Hope and Cooper Landing, in relationship to the Kenai River drainage and waters north of the drainage, again, they say reconsideration is required because in adopting the final rule, it just repeats over and over again. The state of Alaska hires these experts in the Department of Fish and Game to look after the interests of the people of the state of Alaska, the resources of the state of Alaska, and far be it from me to tell them they're wrong and they don't know what they're talking about. I think they have spelled it out in numerous pages of documents here that the CNT determination is flawed. If I can read just a couple of percentages that are actually listed in that document that your staff handed out, there were some studies that that may have been misinterpreted, it would appear to me, and apparently to the Department of Fish and Game, that shows only 7% of the Nanilchik households claimed annual use of the Upper Kenai area fisheries, and a total of only 28% of the Nanilchik residents claimed any such use ever during their lifetime. That also goes on to say that the Nanilchik residents had their highest use in the survey that they took from fisheries closest to Nanilchik, such as the Nanilchik River and Deep Creek, which are, if you look at the map, it's a little tough to see. Nanilchik, the community of Nanilchik happens to sit on the Nanilchik River. Deep Creek is just about, depending on how you look at it, maybe a half a mile to a mile south, depending on how you walk or fly. It's the sponsor's basic agreement that Fish and Game's opinion that the CNT determinations are flawed, and this resolution would ask that federal subsistence board just revisit those considerations and take a look at a little more closely at their 8 criteria that they are required to follow in making C&T determinations.
I'm going to guess that on page 2, line 2, you're really, where you use the word reconsider, you probably intend to use reverse. Is that clearer, or am I going too far?
Mr. Chairman, actually, reconsideration or reconsider is perfectly fine. The chairman is not saying, take it away from these folks. All He's right. saying, please look at those 8 factors that the board is, by their own policies and procedures, supposed to look at when making these determinations. We just question whether that was done.
Sounds good.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Really, Mr. Chairman, since I've been here repeatedly taking up the committee's time for the last couple of weeks, I'd like to just be brief and let you know John Hilsinger from ADF&G should be online to answer questions.
Yes.
And that's all I have for you today, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Well, let's go to public testimony. Daryl Williams in the audience, ready to testify. Need you to come up, identify yourself, and tell us who your affiliations are.
Mr. Chairman, representatives, my name is Daryl Williams. I am a federally qualified subsistence user. I work for Nilchik Traditional Council. I am the resource officer, and I am an environmental scientist. I participated in the delivery and the information that was given to the Federal Subsistence Board in the customary and traditional use process. And the biggest reason that brought me here today is it seems like there's some misinformation that's come up in this, and I would like to be able to share some misinformation with you. Earlier, I handed out a document for the sake of time to try to make it easier for you can review at your leisure some of the instances through this process that's come up. For example, this process has been ongoing for 7 years, and I'm pretty sure nobody's been able to review all 7 years of the documentation. It's obvious when they talk about some of the survey information and how it's been used to prove or not prove or to meet the thresholds of the eight factors of ANOCA. One of these instances that came up was a survey done by Jim Fall. And for a brief example, that it needs to be looked at with scrutiny. One of the problems that came from this survey information was the use of stratification techniques to be able to determine subsistence use in different communities. They were inconsistent. The primary example that would be the closest locally to Nilchik would be Nikolai, where the survey was stratified into new believers and old believers within the same community and who would be eligible for subsistence use and who would not. In the Jim Fall survey, off the top of my head, I believe the longest residency that was surveyed and identified in that survey was 10 years. And in a community such as Nilchik that has a written documentation back to the 1840s, that just doesn't seem realistic, and the target population seemed to be missed. The state addressed this many times through this process. Whether it was Marianne C., whether it was Mackay Campbell, whether it was the new girl who just left. But at any rate, Mackay Campbell was even invited to one of the subsistence meetings where he was able to sit with the subsistence board and direct questions at people giving testimony. I was one of those people. So I think that they've had plenty of opportunity to participate in this process. Being that it's been one of the longest C&T processes that the federal board has done, it has been done very carefully with legal counsel through the Office of the Solicitor and so forth. ANOCA mandates this process and has put this process in place, and we have to follow this process also. If the state of Alaska had significant new evidence that this was wrong, it would be submitted in a proposal to the Federal Subsistence Board and would go through process.
Can you tell me about how much time you're looking in for in your testimony?
Mr. Chairman, Representatives, about another minute, please.
That's good. Thank
okay.
you.
During this process, there has been many requests for reconsiderations, many special action requests, and it has involved legal counsel extensively. I also believe that I would like everyone to consider in these special action requests and requests for reconsideration that these have been reviewed federally and have withstood the threshold of the C&T determination on the eight factors. I'd be happy to answer anybody's questions here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. Thank you for testifying. Are there any questions from the committee? I do have one from Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. What, in your opinion, and thank you for coming here, and is this part of your document? Is this one of yours?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guttenberg, yes, it is.
Could you tell, do you have a sense of what the basic differences are? Sometimes we go through these long processes, kind of deliberate and render down what is the real difference between what they're asking for and what the result of your process was.
The survey processor?
Not just the process, but the end result. They have a different opinion of what your result was. And this resolution is asking us to reconsider that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guttenberg, my feeling is there tends to be a large fear factor that's come with this particular C&T determination. The gentleman from Representative Olson's office, I believe he was very correct in probably a 28% user group. Usually when you do these kind of surveys and you set up the methodology and the design of the survey to indicate the actual user population, it came out to be 28%. And actually the use that comes from that will be a very small number of people. And I think the fear that's come with this customary and traditional use determination is that they're afraid that it'll be a large number of people taking a large amount of fish. Comparing it to, for an example, commercial fishing, how many minutes would it take to catch 500 fish? And it's not days, it's how many minutes of commercial fishing would it take to catch 500 fish? And that was a threshold that we had considered through the C&T process was 500 fish. And that's one of the things that's really kind of alarming in the rural aspect when we look at actual numbers of fish and being able to access some of these stocks.
Satisfied?
We can move on.
Just wondering if you had an additional question.
Not right now. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much for your testimony. I'd like
Thank
to
you.
Go to Daryl. Is it Daryl Reynolds, or did I get that correct? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, it's Daniel Reynolds.
Go ahead.
And I'm representing, or I'm just here as a resident of the NOCHECK. And this won't take very long. Hi, my name is Daniel Reynolds. I'm here to testify on HDR 4 that addresses the community of Nanochek customer and traditional use determination on the Kenai Peninsula for Nanochek residents. Nanochek has proven customer and traditional use on the Kenai Peninsula. Nanochek has provided substantial evidence to support the customer and traditional use determination. And last of all, the meetings that I've been to with the RAC and Fishing Game, they've had substantial time to get their evidence to support what they have to say.
Okay.
That's it.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. Do we have any questions for Mr. Reynolds? None. I have. Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. We have four more people going right to Fishing Game. John Hilsinger. John, can you hear me?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. For the record, my name is John Hilsinger. I'm the director of the Commercial Fisheries Division with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. And the state is deeply troubled by this customary and traditional use determinations that were granted to these communities of Nanilchik, Happy Valley, Hope, and Cooper Landing. We have filed requests for reconsideration, as Mr. Jackson noted. Just by way of background, these communities under state law are all regarded as non-rural in nature and are part of the Anchorage, Mat-Su, Kenai non-subsistence area. The federal board regards these communities as rural, even though they are surrounded by non-rural communities, and has found that they have customary and traditional use in the Kenai and Kasilof River drainages, as well as other waters in the northern part of the Kenai Peninsula. The federal board did not base its decisions on evidence that adequately meets the eight factors required by federal regulation for making a customary and traditional use determination. For example, the regulations require demonstration of a long-term customary and traditional pattern of consistent use by a community of the fish resource on federal lands. As Mr. Jackson noted, the board misused the data that was provided by the department and looked at the number of people that have ever used the area in their entire lifetime. And when you look at the proportion that use it in any given year, it's only less than 7%. And this same pattern existed with regard to the other communities of Hope and Cooper Landing as well. For many of the species in their area, there was extremely low usage by members of those communities of some of those species. The fall report was a very well done report, and it's important to understand that the methodology in that report was by random sample. And only by using a random sample can you do a survey that then represents the usage by the entire community. There have been other studies done of subsistence use in the Nanilchik, but they were targeted at certain portions of the community and certain user groups, and therefore they don't really represent the entire community. And the fact that many of the people who were surveyed had not lived in the Nanilchik very long is actually a characteristic of that community. There's been a huge influx of population, and many of the people who live there have not lived there for very long. Because of this low usage of many of these stocks on the federal public lands, the Federal Subsistence Board used a new definition of stock, where they found that the stocks that were traditionally used, particularly by people of Nanilchik in the Nanilchik River and Deep Creek in those areas, were the same stocks of fish that occur in the Upper Kenai. Mm-hmm. And this is inconsistent with virtually any commonly understood definition of fish stocks. The board also neglected to take several factors into consideration, such as the changing demographics of the communities, the impact that the connection to the available road system has on use levels, and type of use, such as sport fishing. In the case of Nanilchik, its access to and use of more common local fisheries, either in the marine waters near Nanilchik or in the Nanilchik River and Deep Creek. They also failed to consider historical tribal use areas, which in the case of Nanilchik did not include the Upper Kenai River. And finally, it's noted by many people that when Congress established the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge under ANILCA, they left subsistence uses out of the purpose of the refuge. And so when you consider all these collectively, it's the state's position that they do not appear to support a long-term consistent pattern of community use. Some of the other issues involved are the fact that Cook Inlet fisheries are already fully allocated, and the board's decision will eventually result in unnecessary restriction of existing established uses, such as commercial, sport, and personal use. There are conservation issues involved with this, and if the department thought that there was additional harvest that was allowable on those stocks, we would have already supported the many proposals we get to allow increased harvest. And so even though the recommendation that the South Central Regional Advisory Council is going to make on these fisheries to the Federal Subsistence Board, their recommendation is more conservative than the original proposals from the residents, but it's still not conservative enough, and still, particularly for certain stocks such as rainbow trout and steelhead, creates conservation problems.
John, is it possible for you to finish up in about a minute?
Yeah, you bet.
I think we're having fairly consistent testimony, and I'd like to, we're in a rush because of other things we'll be doing next week. So if it's possible, could you summarize for me?
Yes, I will. Three final points. One is that the Federal Subsistence Board has failed to adopt written policies and procedures that have been required of them by the Secretary of Interior. The second, and that's both for doing customary and traditional use determinations and for closures. And the final point is that this is not really a question of putting food on the table. The state provides a broad array of personal use, educational, and recreational fisheries that provide ample opportunity for people to harvest fish for personal and family consumption. And in fact, in most of these communities, the amount of fish harvested under those state fisheries is a small fraction of what people would be allowed to take if they took all that they were allowed. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's all I have.
I'm going to ask you a question, though. You in the bill, it said one of the whereases is that the community didn't meet the eight factors. But you'd mentioned that they didn't have, and now I need a clarification for myself in case I missed it. Are the eight factors perfectly clear that have to be met?
Mr. Chairman, the eight factors refer to mostly to patterns of use. For example, factor number one is a long-term consistent pattern of use, excluding interruptions beyond the control of the community. Factor number two is a pattern of use recurring in specific seasons for many years. And so there's eight of them, and they refer not only to the pattern of use, but the handling, preparation, preservation, handing down knowledge. And so what we look for in this is the background information that supports that the community has met each of these patterns, and we believe that it should be substantial information, because you're providing a preference that restricts other users, and so in that case, it should be fairly, the information supporting that should be fairly clear.
Okay, listen, I think I've got it, and I appreciate your testimony. Is it okay to go on to the next person?
Yes, sir. It's fine by me.
I appreciate that. Rod Arno, Alaska Outdoor Council. Rod, do you have some comments?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, my name is Rod Arno. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Outdoor Council. And first of all, I want to thank the Chairman of the Committee for the opportunity to give testimony. And the Outdoor Council does support passage of this resolution. And there's a number of things that already have been said that I will try not to reiterate, but the most important thing is the fact that the intent of NELCA was not to have a subsistence priority on the Kenai Peninsula. Unlike every other national wildlife refuge, and the Kenai was an existing one that, you know, was added to, there is no provision in the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge to provide for subsistence assistance opportunity. Instead, unlike all the others, it's to provide, in a manner compatible with these purposes, opportunities for fish and wildlife oriented recreation. And also, unlike any of the other parks created by Anelka, the Kenai Fjords National Park does not have a provision for subsistence priority in that national park. So between that and the fact that the state of Alaska has the entire central Kenai Peninsula as a non-subsistence area, then I think that this is at the heart of the question here and the problem, and that the Outdoor Council approves of this resolution and will not take any more of your time.
Thanks, Rod. You mentioned Anelka, and you used the word parks. Did Anelka establish parks or refuges, or is there a mixture?
Okay, it did both.
Thank you.
And on the Kenai, there is the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, which was an extension, and that's under Title III. And then under Title II of Anelka is establishing of new parks, and that's where the Kenai Fjords National Park was established. And both of those exclude a priority for subsistence. And the other point is that I was at those committee meetings that U.S. Representative Udall on Anelka in the late 70s. And clearly in the Anchorage meeting that I went to, over 70% of Alaskans who testified at that meeting said that the Kenai was the area, the Kenai Peninsula was the area that they recreationally hunted and fished.
You know, I'm so glad you testified. I always like to get somebody who can bring up some historical benefits. I believe, was it the D2 lands that Mo Udall was involved with?
Correct.
Okay. Rod, listen, I appreciate your testimony, and hang tight in case we have some powerful, important questions. I'd like you to be there. We'll go to Pete Probasco. Welcome, Pete.
Representative Gatto, this is Pete Probasco, and for your benefit, it's Pete's son. And I'm here just to listen and to answer any questions if the committee has on where the board is in the process on reviewing the state's RFRs.
I appreciate that, and I thought it would be my buddy Pete, but Pete's son is good enough for me. Say hello to Dad.
Will do.
Lastly, from Nanilchik, John Sky Starkey. John, are you there?
I'm here.
John, I'd appreciate it if you keep it down to about 3 minutes so that we can get to something else after this.
Well, I would like to do that, Mr. Chairman, but I feel as though there's substantial things to be said on behalf of Nanilchik that have not been said before. I will try to keep it short, but there's quite a bit to say, and I'm representing an interest that hasn't been heard before on this issue.
So I'm going to guess you're opposed to the bill?
Very much so.
Oh, I appreciate that. Listen, go ahead and testify.
Thank you. Just to clear up a few things that have been said that aren't factually accurate, the bill has to do with Nanilchik and a customary and traditional finding for Nanilchik. I checked with the solicitors a couple weeks ago, and I did not get a clear answer, but I'm not sure that it includes Happy Valley. Secondly, all the arguments that you've heard about the Kenai Peninsula being different than the rest of the state of Alaska as far as Anelka is concerned has been rejected as a legal matter time and again. So you could look at that. You could ask Pete Probasco about that to confirm that.
I'd probably go back to Ron Arno on this. Are you saying there was a court decision?
I'm saying the solicitor's opinion, the Katie John decision, and other decisions rendered by courts are based on public lands, and public lands are on the Kenai Peninsula and have nothing to do with whether or not the refuge itself was set aside for subsistence.
Okay, appreciate that. Go ahead and proceed.
Okay, I just wanted to say that part of the sponsor's statement for and part of what Mr. Hilsinger from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game used as justification for this resolution was that there would be some kind of crippling effect on the Kenai Peninsula, and it may result in the shutting down of other fisheries. In the tribe's opinion, this is really a counterproductive way to approach the whole issue, and has caused a great deal of fear and actually threats against Nanilchik people on the Kenai Peninsula. The fact of the matter is that the South Central Regional Council a couple of weeks ago forwarded a recommendation to the Federal Subsistence Board, which will not impact any other fisheries. And according to the Office of Subsistence Management Fishery Staff and the Wildlife Fishery Staff, will not have any conservation problems. So it would be appreciated on all counts if there was a more productive approach taken to this rather than that sort of fear-mongering. Secondly, many of the arguments that you're hearing are sort of legally based arguments. Is there substantial evidence? Has the Federal Subsistence Board followed its regulations and those sorts of things? If that's the case, then a court will decide or the Federal Subsistence Board will decide. But the legislature is being asked to weigh in this because it's a policy matter. They're being asked for their political clout to try to convince the board to do something. And from the standpoint of the native community, it seems a bit unbalanced that the legislature would weigh in against a tribe that's established customary and traditional use rather than letting it work through the normal legal channels. For example, if the legislature wanted to get involved in policy issues on an equal basis, the community of Saxman has recently been found to be non-rural by the Federal Subsistence Board. And many of the same legal arguments could be made and have been made. But the legislature is not weighing in and asking the Federal Subsistence Board to look at what's going on in Saxman. It's because it's about the Kenai Peninsula, and the Kenai Peninsula has always been a controversial area for subsistence. In fact, this whole controversy started years and years and years ago. The 8 criteria that we talk about were developed because of the Kenai Peninsula at a joint meeting of the Board of Fish and Board of Game. The criteria were used back then to deny customary and traditional use throughout the Kenai Peninsula. And the state of Alaska was sued in the case of the Kenaitse Indian Tribe versus the state of Alaska, based on their findings that no one on the Kenai Peninsula would be entitled to subsistence. And in that decision, the Ninth Circuit found that the state of Alaska was not following the law. So this has a long history, and the history was all reviewed by a federal court judge last March, and he found in his order that the Nanilchik tribe had been shabbily treated for 50 years, and it was time that administratively something was done to allow them subsistence use. If you'll check with the state, the most important criteria, the 8 criteria, is the long-established pattern of use of the resource. And it was important to note that when Mr. Hilsinger read that criteria, there's an essential aspect of it which says that the board must consider interruptions beyond the control of the community when making that kind of a determination. It's beyond dispute that Nanilchik has been denied for 50 years, their opportunity for a traditional subsistence fishery on the Kenai River. For 50 years, because of commercial and sports fishing and conservation reasons, for one reason or another, the state of Alaska and the federal government have denied them that use. And so they have had to survive for 50 years, catching what they can to maintain their way of life. And that was an important part in all this consideration. And so when the state says 7% or 4% or 20%, the federal board looked at all that in the context of what that pattern of use is now and how the long 50-year period of regulatory prohibition of their way of life had impacted things. The fall report and the other things that the state talks about were reviewed in detail by the Federal Subsistence Board, and people just disagreed about what the outcome was. So I'll just wrap it up by saying that, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the time.
Thanks, Mr. Starkey. I'm going to go back to Rod Arno. Rod, was there something you heard that you wanted to comment on? And I don't think it's unfair. I just think I wish both of you were here in the room and we could listen to both of you together. So, Ron, are you still there?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
is, you know, the only point there is that, you know, a federal judge said that the intent was that all federal land would be used for subsistence. Well, that certainly isn't what's on the record of the intent of ANILCA when they created the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, that they specifically excluded the priority for subsistence use on that refuge. And when they specifically excluded the priority for subsistence hunting in the Kenai Fjords National Park, it was based on the testimony that was gathered prior to the passage of ANILCA. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks. And Mr. Starkey, I'll give you last word.
Yes, sir.
You have another comment?
Well, I understand what Mr. Arno's saying. When he says it was specifically precluded, that might lead some members of the committee to assume that the legislation, ANILCA says, subsistence shall not be allowed on the Kenai Peninsula, and there's nothing in the law that says that. Okay. So as far as it being specifically excluded, there's nothing I know of that specifically excludes it.
Okay, appreciate it. Is there anyone else that wants to testify? I think we've covered the last person. With that, I'll close public testimony, come back to the attention of the members here. Is there a comment that anyone wants to add? If not, I would consider a motion on CS for House Joint Resolution 4, version K. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move CS for HGR 4 K with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
I object.
There's an objection. Would you speak to your objection?
Sure.
Or
I'd be delighted to. We didn't really have time to go through all the whereases, but we heard some strong contrary testimony. I've sat on a few committees in this body, and sometimes things just are not balanced or seem to be fair, and you have one side or the other having a preference. For me, it boils down to a statement that John Helsinger said, and I'll quote, Cook Inlet resources are already all allocated. That means we already took care of it, and we like the way it is. Now, there's other processes that allow other people through the Federal Subsistence Board to actually have an input into that. And I think this simply says we don't want you to consider those things, and we don't want to deal with them. We don't like them for political reasons, and we want you to reconsider them. And I think that's inappropriate. Personally, because I have strongly disagreed with decisions from commercial fishing in the past and allocation issues in the past. Being a sport fisherman from the interior, I'm the last person to get any fish. What's allowed to come up the rivers into the interior, and I see that as a problem of who's controlling it on the coast before it hits the rivers. So, I see this as an opportunity outside of the State Fish and Game Board. For people to have an input, people have the ability to make a difference for themselves, and I'm going to stand behind my objection.
Okay, so the objection is maintained. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a very difficult one, mainly for me, because one side says that the 8 factors have been met. The other side says the 8 factors haven't been met. And so it's difficult to make a decision when you know that you don't necessarily have the right facts in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very difficult for me to make a decision, and frustrating.
Well, fair enough. I mean, basically, the bill is a request to reconsider a decision. It's not a very high bar. Representative Roses.
I think Kawasaki had his hand up before I did.
Well, I just wanted to make the comment, too, that with Representative Wilson saying, I agree. I think, we've got a lot of information here. We have information on why, according to the state, the 8 specific factors haven't been met. I don't see the original language as from the Federal Subsistence Board saying why they had been met, and I think that just we need more information, more time to digest this before we move it out of committee.
So you're in favor of holding it for another day?
It, yes.
And Representative Roses, you are too?
Just the concern that I had was that we've already heard the person testifying from the Department of Fish and Game said that they had already filed an appeal. So obviously the appeal process is going forward regardless of whether we take any action on this resolution or not. And so I guess I don't, I'm not 100% sure where I feel about us jumping in on a process that's already been appealed. If an appeal hadn't been filed, I could understand us saying we think you ought to appeal one, or you shouldn't appeal it. But the fact that this is already in motion and we're just sort of jumping in on this thing at this point in time with what appears to be conflicting opinions, and again, it I see absolute validity on both sides of this issue, and so it makes it very tough to decide where to come down.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yeah, I do agree that this is a resolution.
Promotion?
Yes. Chairman. You know, I think we've got quite a bit of data, and we had it before in fisheries also that the eight criteria were not met. We've got the requirement by the Secretary of Interior that written policies are to be adopted. They have not been adopted by that regulatory body. So those become difficult. The other thing is that this area, you know, you look at the map, I mean, it's not far from my area, but you have to go by a number of river systems before that are full of fish, and the biggest lake on the Kenai Peninsula, you have to go by that area before you get to the area where this expansion is of traditional uses trying to take. And also there wasn't a road there until, you know, 52. So there was not access up there for that. And since then it's been by sport methods and means. So I feel comfortable asking the federal board to review the criteria to see if they were met, to review their policies, and to reconsider the decision. I mean, we're not overriding their decision. It's a request for a review of their decision without having to go through the court system and without having to go through there. So I think that it's a very logical step for us to ask for the review of that by the federal board for the review of their decision, or to reconsider their decision, instead of just jumping right into court.
Fair enough. Doing some arithmetic here, and I'm going to hold this bill for another day. And excuse me, we'll take it up again probably next meeting. I need a little housekeeping done. Representative Wilson had moved CS for House Bill 203, and we don't have on record that it included attached fiscal notes. So if we can simply make the motion all over again to she did say it?
Yeah, I said it.
We had a...
I didn't catch it. I was too busy.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I did say it.
Okay. So we don't have to do the housekeeping then? We're okay. With that, I'd like to advance to... I'm going to skip my bill and go directly to Representative Buick's bill, which is HB 220, computer-assisted hunting, and we'll get to my bill next time, which is Agriculture Day. But I wanted to get Representative Buick's bill going here so we can kind of pick it up the next time we meet in case we don't conclude today. Representative Buick, you have the floor.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you very much. I appreciate the expeditious manner that this is being heard and seen, and I'll try to be as brief as I can. There are a number of people here and online wanting to comment. So last week, a new phase called Internet Hunting was brought to my attention. At first, I thought it was a joke. I have since found out that it's not. Internet hunting is when a person anywhere in the world can shoot animals from their living rooms by hooking up their computers to a rifle through the internet. The hunter, quote unquote, is able to control the aiming and firing of the rifle from their computer keypad to make a kill with a click of the mouse. This practice began in Texas in 2005 when an entrepreneur offered people the ability to shoot big game on his land via remote control technology. The Texas legislature shut him down. Since then, 25 states have passed legislation to ban the practice, and legislation is pending in 9 other states currently. HB 220 would prohibit this despicable practice in Alaska. As everyone knows, we have some of the best big game animals in the world. We need to ban this practice before it hits Alaska. The guys doing this are getting run out of other states, and I want to make sure that they don't try to come up here. HB 220 does 3 things. Number one, it will prohibit individuals from engaging in internet hunting in Alaska. Second, it would prohibit anyone from providing services or operating facilities in the state to enable computerized hunting activities. Finally, it would make sure that future technology designed to assist the legitimate needs of handicapped or disabled hunters out in the woods would not be subject to the ban created in this bill. HB 220 is a preemptive strike against a practice that is insulting to sportsmen everywhere. Support for this bill is coming from every corner: the Humane Society, the NRA, the SPCA, and hunting organizations. The Department of Fish and Game supports too. I encourage you to join me in sending a message to these so-called hunters that Alaska is off limits to virtual hunters. I'm glad to answer any questions you might have, keeping in mind there are others here that want to comment.
Thank you, Representative Buick. Are you saying that there's a person sitting in San Diego watching Oprah, and a commercial comes on, they move over to their computer and aim a rifle, press a button, an animal falls somewhere in Alaska, he's done, somebody goes out there, takes the rack, cuts up the meat, and ships it to him, all the while he's still watching Oprah?
Potentially. That is something that I don't agree to. And I would hope with your support we can make sure it does not happen.
Well, I sure appreciate that, since I'm a co-sponsor. All right. I'll go right to public testimony so we can move this as quickly as possible if we have the time. And we only have a few minutes. Rod Arno, are you there?
Yes, thanks again, Mr. Chairman. Rod Arno, Executive Director for the Alaska Outdoor Council. And the Outdoor Council does support this piece of legislation. And clear enough, in the Alaska Outdoor Council, the whole thing is built on the premise of being outdoors. And part of that hunting experience that I've experienced for the last 40 years is being there. And I think that, you know, this flies in the face of that experience of the hunter heritage that we're trying to protect. Very much, Chairman.
I appreciate that, Ron. I have an amazing respect for wildlife, and to me, this is just an abomination. And maybe the chair shouldn't be saying that, but I am the co-sponsor. Steve Arlo, are you there?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am.
Was it just for questions, or did you want to give some testimony?
Well, I was just standing by in case the issue of the fines came up, but I'll stand by in case there's any discussion on that.
Appreciate that. Joe and K-L-U-T-S-E-H, Clutch, are you on the air here?
Last yes. Mr. Chairman, my name is Joe Clutch. Members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to comment. I represent Alaska Professional Hunters Association, and we're basically Alaska's association representing guides and outfitters around the state. I want to offer my support of HB 220 as written. I was aware of internet, cyberspace. It's not hunting, if I can ask the committee to accept that. This is not hunting. I was aware of this over a year and a half ago when it first surfaced in the lower 48. You should all have copies of the letter that I wrote talking about my perceptions of hunting, about being in the field and actually coping with all the elements common to outdoor activities. And hunting is, you know, really it's a real-life drama that involves doubt, frustration, anxiety, discovery, great physical and mental challenge at times. and joy and disappointment. The outcome of this process is by no means assured. What you're looking at here is basically the organized killing of an animal via cyberspace and robotics. It is not hunting, and I would request that henceforth you don't refer to it as that. I think this is fairly self-evident where the committee should go with this. So many other states in the lower 48 have gone this direction. And I think this may just be one of the first waves we're going to see in terms of the use of these kind of technologies to utilize wildlife. And so I commend the authors of the bill for it, and we offer our wholehearted support.
Thanks, Joe. I kind of think of it as shopping for groceries. I'm going to go. We have only one more person, but we did not adopt the CS, so I'm going to ask Representative Seaton to do that for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move CS for House Bill 220, 25 LS0795, /C, before the committee.
Is there an objection? So we have the CS before us, and Steve, you might want to know that the committee substitute deletes the section B on the fines, and we'll take that up in another bill that will be before us shortly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, it moved it to the back? Oh, brother. Okay. Well, I might have to take it back, but that's where we stand right now. Ronnie Rosenberg, Fairbanks, you'll be the last guy to speak.
Well, I'm a woman, so I hate to disappoint you. This is Ronnie Rosenberg up in Fairbanks, and I am in support of this bill. I think computer-assisted remote hunting is an abomination. I think it reduces animals to no more than a pawn in a video game, and it should not be allowed in this state. I'm representing solely myself today as I'm giving this testimony.
Thanks, Ronnie, and I'm not disappointed. That will close public testimony. Is the committee have some conversation, or if we're going to have too much, we'll have to hold it over. Representative Rose.
One quick question, just for point of clarification, because I've signed on as a co-sponsor as well. This would restrict not only somebody from having the hunting in this state, but if I read this correctly, it also would restrict me if I wanted to hunt an animal in Texas on my computer from this state. I couldn't do that either.
Good point. Representative Buick?
Yes, that's exactly correct.
Wanted that clear and on the record.
Through the chair.
Two-way street.
Thank you, Representative Roses.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Guttenberg?
Thank you. And I don't want to hold this up, but would you, on line five, when you're talking about computer-assisted hunting or provide or operate a facility, would you want to consider, and I would leave this to the sponsor to do in another committee, add the word a service, any service?
We could take that under advisement through the chair.
Sure, that's all.
Okay. Are there any other questions from the committee? I would entertain a motion to move this bill. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move House Bill, or the CS for House Bill number 220, version C, with individual recommendations, and zero.
Looks like there. Zero, yeah.
Any fiscal, yeah. That's
okay, and there are no amendments either, so is there an objection? Without objection, this bill moves from committee, and my poor agriculture bill will be heard less time. But
we
I'm
can move that right now, too.
Yeah. Now, we're already over time. Meeting's adjourned. I appreciate it.